podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Rob Gutman to my left, your right, I think, as you look, wearing a wonderful Sporting Racing Green number. I've also got Sean Rogers and Sean Bennett in order to go through the broken news today around Roberto Firmino. We're going to look back at Wolves as well. Joe Blott speaking to John Gibbons from Spirit of Shankly and Tim O'Tierney to talk about the flurry and other matters arising. And we're going to look ahead to Manchester United. It's a packed tour live. If you're joining us live, thank you very much indeed, wherever you are in the world. It's 4 p.m. here in Liverpool. If you are listening to this as a podcast, it's lovely that you've chosen to do that and you've opted in to this Anfield Rap Fandango today, as we do have a fair bit to get through. I've got to start off with you, Sean. It is the news around Roberto Firmino is it prompts a lot of responses. I think the first thing that I want to sort of dwell on is say, you know, what a servant to the football club. You know, he's won everything there is to win. There's so many big goals, even if there weren't even necessarily big numbers of goals, given the fact that he wore a number nine on his back. He will leave as a Liverpool great.
Yeah, I think any player that stays at a club for 8 years, is always going to have some sort of respect and admiration. But any player that plays for Liverpool Football Club and scores more than 100 goals will always have a special place in all of our hearts. And for 20 million, and he's was, you know, going through a transition, signed by a different manager, Klopp comes in, and there's not that many players that you can think of that have scored over 100 goals. I think it's only about 19, 20. So that's a very elite group of people to be in. Michael Reid from Opta put out a mad stat before that Firmino had the second best win rate when starting in all competitions, only behind Salah. But that was above Yadal Gleishas, Souness's.
Those losers.
All them losers, yeah. so yeah, not a good word to say about him, but you know what I'm really happy about? I guess take the way he's leaving. I think it's the best way to leave. You know, he wasn't frozen out. He wasn't kicking up a fuss. It's been really, really respectful on both parts. And it is sad. It's sad sentiment-wise, but I've not really got any qualms with it at the same time. Like, you know, happy to give him the send-off, but kind of happy he's going at the same time. If you're looking at last year, well, even this year, he has been plagued with injuries. He wasn't playing that much of a role in the finals. If anything, I think it was just like a late appearance. I was actually surprised the extension chat was offered and that Klopp was mentioning it probably back in Jan, wasn't it? But I think it was a little bit of lip service. I think they've given him a bit of a crap offer anyway and kind of forced his hand with it, but at least the, you know, we all talk about it nicely online now, and there's no hard feelings.
There's, for me, Rob, a key part of this is I'm into a well-timed exit. You know, the idea of In 18 months, someone might be saying, what on earth were we doing there, giving Firmino that extra time? And then you do begin to get into the slightly besmirched legacy question and all of that. You know, for me, it is the perfect moment. He is Liverpool great. It's inarguable. He's won everything there is to win. And he is one of the players I've watched that's given me the most satisfaction. And I think he's one of the players I've watched that has got the most out of his teammates that I've ever seen. He's at his best. He made all the footballers he played with far better.
I'm just not, I'm the wrong person to go to for rich tribute.
Because, go on.
Well, I'll tell you why, because of course he's fantastic and I agree with everything you just said, but I'm just not interested in wasting my breath on giving rich tributes at this particular moment.
You're no yesterdays. All tomorrows.
Last day of the season. Bye-bye. See you, Bobby. Emotional little tear in the eye.
Is that what you'll do?
Little chat down the pub. We'll talk about it. And we'll do a show and we'll talk about how great he was. We're in
not
the middle
this of, one, though.
No, not interested. No, I'm not, honestly. I'm all about the decision and the implications of the decision and why the decision has been made.
Hit me with the implications of the decision.
Well, because before we get sentimental about it, as though it was a given, up to a month ago, Klopp was going, I want Bobby to stay. We're doing all we can to make him stay. Bobby's aging because Bobby would love to stay. So something sort of changed, right? And I think that's, at the moment, more interesting than all the lovely goals he scored in the past. And I think the thing, let's put it this way. I think if we were having the season we had last year, but it was still his last season, I think we'd have re-signed him. I think there's been a mood music which has influenced the likes of Jürgen and others at the club that says wholesale change is needed. Therefore, the even if there's a hint of sentimentality or a hint of giving an aging star a minute longer than is necessary. We're not in that. We're not doing that anymore. And I think that, you know,
people... Do you not think the Gakpo thing is part of this as well? I know he was making some of the noises post-Gakpo, but for me, that felt still like it was an overhang from, well, we're in the midst of conversations, we're in the midst of negotiations. I can't sit here in a press conference and end them. That's not the way we do our business. But I do sort of wonder whether or not Gakpo sort of comes a teeny bit from nowhere or left field, but you know what I mean? It feels like there was a deal suddenly to be done and Liverpool took the opportunity to do it. Do you think that might have influenced things?
I think at the time of the Gakpo deal, we were looking at Diaz out for a long time, Jota out for a long time, and Firmino was about to get injured actually at that point. So I think there was a feel, and he was an opportunity. I actually think Jota was Firmino's replacement. So we're going back a couple of years now, really. Mm. During the pandemic season, he was beginning to edge Jota. By the end of that season, at times he was knocking Bobby out of the side.
But my skepticism on that is, I think Liverpool. You want to talk about replacements? I think Liverpool knew that they couldn't just keep running with three. Ended up now settling in a position where they're happy to run with five. I mean, there's someone in the comments who's saying it's another player that will need replacing. I think we can come on to that.
Well, I said that in Twitter today, and some people just laughed in my face as they like to do.
So you need six forwards.
Emojis. Sorry,
you need six forwards.
Yeah.
Get to you in a minute, Sean. I'm enjoying this. Go on. You need six forwards.
Yeah, I'm beginning to. I think one of the lessons of this season have been, if you play the Liverpool, the Jurgen Klopp Liverpool way, the wear and tear is huge. And Jurgen will rightly complain about too many games. He will also ask his players to give an enormous amount. The only conclusion you can reach is, if we're to continue with the Jurgen Klopp project, which we all want to do, we need a bigger squad. We need a bigger squad so that we can rest legs. And that means
you need six elite forwards.
Yeah, they can't be drop downs on each other. In a way, this is why City have been able to retain their edge. They can't be drop downs. So, I do think we need another left footed forward. We're sitting there with expecting Mo Salah to play every single game and never get an injury. Okay. So far, so good.
The tactical stuff then, Sean. Do Liverpool need another forward?
Depends. So we were talking on the review about whether we might start seeing more four forwards. And I would prefer to see Liverpool use a bit of an Alex Ferguson approach, where maybe in Europe, especially away from home against the big sides, that you might see a 4-3-3 set up. I do think there's lots of games where it might give Liverpool more variety and Liverpool might be more suited to having four forwards on the pitch. You can debate what formation you want that to look like and what you do without. But ultimately, you look at this season as an example, it surprised me a little bit looking at some of the data that defensively our record is not dissimilar to Manchester City and Arsenal, which was weird because it feels like we've got no real structure that people can get at us, that the amount of big chances Alisson's having to save, it feels like you're not built on strong foundations. And that does feed into the creativity, of course it does, but we're a goal a game down on where we really want to be.
On City and Arsenal.
Against City and Arsenal. So sort of having, when you've got Diaz, Jota, Nunes, Salah, and then young players like Elliot, Ben Doak, Blair coming through.
Cade Gordon, and that, Carvalho,
Cade Elliot. Gordon, and that's before you look at possible opportunities to recruit as well, if Liverpool wanted to do that. I always feel we're a bit of a winger light. And I think rather than buying a load of midfielders to play three, where I'm still adamant that Jurgen Klopp doesn't like midfielders and doesn't want them, and he really hates this batch of midfielders now, but he still wants to play three of them. I think you do replace Bobby, but I'm not sure you replace him with Bobby because, you know, as Rob was saying, we've seen Jota and Pete Jota sort of arguably make himself first choice in that position anyway. I think Darwin's long-term future is playing the number nine role. Gakpo can play in between the lines. Jota can probably play off Gakpo. I think succession planning for Mo and having another winger in the squad that can operate on the right-hand side, that has pace, that's sort of my Harvey Elliott issue a little bit, is the pace question there. That's what I would like to see Liverpool do.
Sean, do we need another forward?
I just don't see any obvious replacement with the squad that we've already got. If you're looking at any of the fringe players, Carvalho, Elliott, some of the younger lads. I almost think the opposite to Sean. Like, I feel like we've got so many lads who love playing on the wing. When it comes to centrally, apart from Jota and Gakpo and maybe Nunes when he plays there. There's just not loads of people that are really obvious for me to put in the middle. And I guess a bit of the confusion comes from what do we want that middle role to be in the front three? Because it used to be really obvious when it was Bobby, but now some games we've got Gakpo as a number nine. If Nunes plays down the middle, he's way more in the box. So, yeah, not too sure.
My thing on this, Rob, is it's back to what's been the question all season, which is that Liverpool are in transition, but what are they transitioning to? So are they transitioning to a different way of playing? Because if they are going to play with effectively three and a half up front, which I think has been part of the Elliott thing, and even at times when Henderson's occupied that right-hand sided role, there's been onus on him, then maybe you do need to look at one more. And within that, there is a valid question around Elliott, who I thought was excellent the other night against Wolves, don't get me wrong, and Carvalho, where they haven't got pace. They're not quick players and they're not physically imposing players in terms of size, in terms of that, and they're not quick. I think Elliott's got a really good Liverpool career in front of him. I want to be really clear about that, but he's not pure forward in a Liverpool sense. And I still think the question is, well, what are we transitioning to? Because if we are transitioning to often playing something that would almost look a little bit like 4-2-1-3, which is what it's looked like at times this season, then you can make an argument you need one more of someone who can play in the one or the three. But if it is going to be 4-3-3, then I think you're back to your focus being on you've got five quality options up front, Elliott, Carvalho, Doak and Gordon, who can come in and out in different ways and make that work for you. I'd love there to be. Someone's put in there about Ivan Toney. I'd love there to have a profile of an Ivan Toney, don't get me wrong. But just sort of see what I mean, I still think that the key question is, well, what is it we're going to be doing? Because I'll find it easier to say whether or not we've got the numbers to do what we're going to be doing when I know what I think we're going to be doing.
Well, I think we should assume we're doing both things. Well, we're going to be doing a full-on four forward thing, because we've seen Jürgen do that at times when he's had the players available. There has been a sense that he wants to use his best players rather than he wants to play the system, I felt at times. But when Jota, Firmino, Mane and Salah were all fit, there were occasions, like massive games like City away, where he put all four on the pitch. There was a sense that he thought all four were in form, so find a way to get them on the pitch rather than be wedded to the system. That's my intuition, which may or may not be correct. But if he wants the tactical option of genuinely playing four proper forwards, as he did on that occasion, then you have to have six. I would also argue that there's a bit of a numbers game and playing the percentages element to this. Salah is elite, albeit he's had a difficult year. Nunes clearly is on the right trajectory. You know, he could arguably be talking about him being our best player at the moment. And Diaz has proven himself in his time here. Gakpo, as for me, although he's shown bits and pieces, hasn't come close to showing he's the level Liverpool need long term. Not even close. So Jota hasn't scored a goal in 26 games. Well, although he's made 10 assists and he's played well the other night. So to my mind, I want the opportunity to bring through another player who's at the level of Salah, Mane, Nunes, Diaz into our squad. And then let them punch it out. Because quite frankly, if Gakpo or Jota aren't at the level of a new lad who comes in a year's time, and we're talking about pensioning one of them off early, happy days. So to me, it makes all sense in the world to bring in a sixth. Because whether you want to play a system which often has four, or whether you want to actually just have the best players available, or deal with injury crisis, or deal with legs. Now, I'm not saying we have to buy an £80 million forward. We could buy an up-and-coming speed merchant who could deputise for Salah. I do realise there's the Doak K. Gordon thing, but
Adama Traore on a free. I know how to live.
I'm saying nothing. What's his name from Newcastle? Right,
Sam Maximan.
Yeah, he's my Adama Traore, although I think he's better than Adama Traore.
He's better than Adama Traore, but
he's not coming to Liverpool.
No, and he also flatters to deceive. Say what you want about Adama Traore, he doesn't flatter to deceive. No one's deceived. The deception fails these days. I asked you just to plan for you to tell me your favourite ever Roberto Firmino goal. I'm not going to ask this fella. Sian, what's your favourite ever Roberto Firmino goal?
Toss up between the Club World Cup. I think it was the semis, wasn't it?
Well, he scores in the semi and the final.
Oh, in the final, yeah. Well. Both of them, yeah, why not? And then Palace away, was it about 17 or 18?
When Henderson plays the through ball through and he puts it in and takes his top off.
Yeah, love it. And then all of the no looks.
Sean, favourite Firmino goal?
I'll answer for Rob. That'll be Firmino.
No, I've got one.
Against United. No, I mean in the future, Rob, because you're
the one on Sunday. Now.
So Bobby's winner on Sunday is Rob's answer, I suspect.
Okay.
Mine is Arsenal 18-19, the slalom. not just because of the quality. It felt like a really big night, that one. And I think we'd gone 1-0 down. And yeah. it's a big goal at a big moment. And I think that'll be the one that's most remembered as well, all round. I think there's just a bit of everything in that goal.
I've got two cheeky ones.
Go on.
One, I think, is the goal where, for me, in a certain sense, he truly arrived as a Liverpool player. And it's no, he had arrived already. But I love his goal in the 4-3 against City.
Yeah,
the one where we were 2-1. It's a Robbie Fowler style goal that he uses his body brilliantly. I don't know why that goal always sticks in my mind. And then there's a goal he scores from an angle against Spurs, which many people talk about the Salah goal against Man U as being the league title clincher in effect. I feel that goal against Spurs won us the league. That was the moment I thought that they're never getting this back.
There's that one. That's a 1-0. He also scores in a similar sort of period. He scores a winner away at Palace in the November to make it 2-1 that I absolutely love to pieces.
Yeah.
And he scores a winner at Wolves after the Spurs goal, after the United goal.
Yeah.
He scores that winner at Wolves, which is just...
vital goal.
It really wasn't, because we ended up winning 20-odd points clear. But
it felt vital.
It felt like we're not going anywhere. We'd had the big celebration in front of the Kop the game before with Salah making it 2-0. This one felt like, no, we really, now you are going to believe us. We've just gone to Wolves and won 2-1. Wolves are much the better side second half. Okay, we'll move forward. We'll talk about Wolves. God, just nothing but Wolves these days on the Anfield Wrap. Got more Wolves than we know what to do with.
Should get an actual Wolf on?
I'd love to get an actual Wolf on. I think that the big bad Wolf is one
the big bad guy.
He's one of my favourite Wolves. Yeah. Who's your favourite Wolf?
The one of Wall Street.
The one of Wall Street's good Wolf, rock solid.
Yeah.
As far as Wolves are concerned, there's Harvey Wolf from Pulp Fiction.
Ah,
Mr. Wolf.
Yeah. The Wolf.
I'm assuming this is Neil. Is this just for the studio? You're not going to be sending this to our houses on.
The Wolf is just for the studio. We'll have him in a safe place.
This is going to go through
HR. Sorry, it's Winston Wolf, not Harvey Wolf. He's played by Harvey Keitel. Sorry, Andy. Andy's hit me in the private chat there. Yes, Winston Wolf. That's another excellent Wolf. Text in with your favourite Wolf. Wolf from Gladiators.
Oh.
That is one of the Wolves in question. He was a baddie Wolf. Air Wolf, says Andy as well. We're not short of Wolves. Wolverine, excellent Wolf.
When you think about it, there's quite a lot of Wolf and Wolf derivatives in the world.
There's more Wolves than you expect.
Quite influential.
They are indeed.
The fellows who founded Rome, they were Wolves.
They were Wolves. Romulus and Remus.
Yeah, well, they're raised
by Wolves.
They're Mar.
Yes.
Duran Duran.
Hungry fella.
Like the,
you bring them in. They can do the backing music when the Wolf comes into the studio.
Absolutely perfect. Teen Wolf, says Colin Walmsley. Excellent stuff indeed. We're not short of Wolves. And we had Wolves the other night. But they were not influential Wolves, Sean. They had their last shot of the game on the 13th minute. Teen Wolf would expect and demand more if he was playing in a game like that one. Liverpool are just good over the course of the 90 minutes. They're never great. They're never absolutely brilliant. And in the context of the Firmino sort of situation, I think it's worth pointing out the Diogo Jota contribution. Rob makes the really valid point. He could do with a goal like no one's business. But there's direct driving runs in there, and it's an exact assist for Virgil van Dijk that demands to be finished.
Yeah, he finally looks fit again, doesn't he? I think he has a few cameos coming back off the injury, but even Klopp admitted he wasn't quite there. That's my front three for the foreseeable now. Hopefully with Diaz coming back at the end of the month. But yeah, brilliant. Very, very solid base to go from. Four clean sheets with different centre-back pairings in each one as well, I think. Which has probably been... It's weird, isn't it? It's four clean sheets, but if you actually watch the games, it really didn't feel like that, especially some moments in the Palace game. But it felt like Liverpool of old. We kept knocking on the door. Nothing fazed us. The goal being ruled out in other games in the past and in this season could have really halted us. But we kept going. I thought everyone who's been having a stinker had a good game as well. Van Dijk isn't immune to that. Fabinho as well. Good times all around.
It was good times all around, Sean. I think the Jota to me is interesting. Sean just said there, called for him to stick it out at that point. The Jota thing is he's very unshowy as a footballer. He's one of the least showy attacking sort of footballers I can ever think of. He does really, really well for that goal. He keeps it alive. He doesn't look for the self-aggrandizing moments. He does the thing that I'm always surprised that players don't do more, which is just kick it really hard. I always feel as though as footballers who can kick it really hard, at times they're annoyingly reluctant to do so. And he basically creates a genuine moment of absolute danger, and it's Van Dijk who responds to it best and nods home. They find their way through the game a little bit. You know, Tsimikas for the winner does brilliantly as well. Game-breaking set pieces, 2-0 wins. It just sort of feels like this is just a way that you win normal football matches when you are a better side than your opponents. It's just something we have not seen that much of.
Yeah, and you can caveat this by Wolves not being a great side, and also the fact that I don't think Wolves have the tools to hurt us in the way that a lot of other sides do. You look at people like, obviously, Vicentius Jr., but if you look at weaker teams like Maximan, if you look weaker again at Michael Olise for Palace, Traore just didn't deliver second half for them at all. They haven't got the kind of pacey wide men that's going to try and get down the sides of our centre-backs and hurt us in that regard. But I think in the wider sense, Liverpool have obviously been really, really fragile. And I thought in the first 15 minutes, we were really poor. It was Wolves' best spell in the game. And we just suffered a little bit. And that's not something we've done very well. And also the reaction to Nunez's disallowed goal for a team and a squad that's been quite fragile, that could have affected the performance. And if anything, I just thought they moved up an extra gear. And it's that old Liverpool thing that I always felt that if it didn't look like it was going to be our day, Liverpool just went, nah, it is going to be our day. We're going to make it our day. And that is what the top teams do. So it couldn't have been better timed in that regard. We have to now show we can do that on a consistent basis. And obviously we need to show that we can do that against the bigger sides as well. And then the next time we go 1-0 down, that's the real acid test of being able to show we can do it at that point. But loads and loads of positives. The only, from 15 minutes on, the only slight negative, as I say, is I've seen that start from Liverpool too often this season where I feel we're overplaying at the back. It's very predictable what we're going to do from the back at the start of a game. And they haven't quite got some of the positioning right in front of that. And it's too easy for teams to play through into midfield and then get at us. And United are going to turn up with a very firm plan, similar to what Wolves were doing, similar to what Real Madrid do, and say this Liverpool team in the first 20 minutes give you a chance. And if you can pinch and off them at midfield, you're right at them. And that's when they can be fragile. And I think Liverpool have to have a different plan for the first 15 minutes of this game.
The idea of Wolves in that first 15, Rob, you know, they do get a bit of joy. It is worth pointing out, as Sean says. And they do really have quite a clear sort of setup of style. They're going to press Liverpool at times. They have got six or seven players in the Liverpool half. They are hunting down where they feel as though Liverpool are. It struck me as because of the nature of the Wolves side, I think it felt like they knew it was their best chance to get something from the game was that sort of approach to Rattlers. And it's also arguably what they do well at Molineux as well.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they're successful only for a very limited period, though, I would say. I felt that was Liverpool's most defensively secure performance for some time, really. I mean, maybe argue against Everton, bar when they hit the post and then we scored as a result, and they then didn't affect the game at all, apart from, I think, Tom Davies' header. Wolves weren't able to affect the game at all. We are seeing signs of Liverpool beginning to control games again now. Admittedly, not yet against top opposition, but that's what encouraged me, really. I thought from back to front, there were signs of consistency. I agree with what Sean says. I'm not sure sometimes what we're doing when we're pissing about at the back these days. There seems to be a nerviness around the keeper.
I think there's something strange about it, Rob, which is I think we are trying to draw them out and because we feel as though we'll have space to explode into.
Yeah.
But I feel as though sides are going, you're trying to draw us out here because you'll feel as though you've got space to break into. We're still going to be drawn out, but we've got a plan for when you get past the next bit, much of which is we're just going to foul you on the halfway line, lads. And Wolves were doing a lot of that. There was a lot of, we're just going to foul you on the halfway line, lads.
We'll press you effectively and win the ball off you.
Yeah.
I mean, because you've shown the ball can be won off your midfielders now. None of your guys feel that press resistant anymore. So that's the problem. You know, we used to laugh, I think, at the Arteta side that used to try and play it out from the back. And it was just manna from heaven for us. We just pick them off and score goals against them. And we've become that side a little bit. So I don't know. But look, in looking back on the Wolves game, I thought it was a really good performance against a team. We can't just say we're makeweights in the way or a shit team like Everton were. They're a much improved side. They gave us a real tonking the other week at Molineux. But I thought that the consistency of performance, I mean, you and I sat together and we Obviously, we struggled to find a man of the match. I think we both agreed on Trent more or less.
Yeah, we did.
But, I mean, I've watched it back again, and although Jota, you know, I've focused on Jota having not scored, he does get the assist, and he's really quite influential in the game, and he gets shots away, which is how I judge forwards, really, by getting shots away, being in positions to get shots away. It was always a mantra going back with the old Liverpool managers like Paisley, and so, look, you know, judge them harshly if they're not getting shots, because if they're getting shots away, they will score. That's what you can say. Say the same of Darwin Nunes. You can say the same of Jota. Salah is playing better, I think, the last couple of games. Through the side, and I think everyone who came away from that game said, was that Fabinho's best performance of the season? Because I think it probably was.
I think it probably was as well. Listen, thank you very much. Listen to Tour Live, whether live or as a podcast. If you're a podcast listener, you are about to listen to John Gibbons speak to Joe Blott from Spirit of Shankly, and then me speak to Tim O'Tierney about his big guitar project at the Florrie. That is coming up if you are listening to the podcast. But if you're listening to Tour Live, you'll find that we'll be back in a matter of seconds.
It is John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm in a coffee shop in Liverpool City Centre, meeting up with Joe Blott, who lots of people know is chair of Spirit of Shankly, involved on the supporters board as well, and here to talk, well, a bit of an update on what is going on with Paris. So, first of all, Joe, thanks for meeting up with me today. Appreciate your time.
Hi, you're welcome, and really good to speak to you again.
So, we'll start with last week then. Lots of people will have seen the meetings that took place, but if you could give people a bit more info on the discussions and where you feel like we're at the moment with UEFA and with what happened in Paris, and just a little bit of your emotions, how you felt during the meeting and coming out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it came out the blue, really, in terms of the request. So we obviously all had the leak of the inquiry document, which I think we're all pleased about, to say that Liverpool fans were exonerated from any blame whatsoever. UEFA came out then with a fairly bland statement to say they accepted the report, full stop. So we wanted something more. But actually, we were quite pleased that through Football Supporters Europe, who are our conduit, UEFA asked to meet with fan reps last week prior to the Real Madrid game, which we took that offer because we felt, obviously, in terms of having a public apology that they'd made, it was just words. And we wanted something more than words. We wanted absolute assurance that A, the apology was real, but B, that action was going to be taken as well.
And you feel like we're on the right steps towards getting that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the meeting has to remain confidential,
yeah,
for good reason. Am I satisfied with the outcome of it? No. Am I encouraged by it? Yes. But my satisfaction is only going to come when we see the action plan and when we see all the changes that UEFA need to make. But yeah, I'm encouraged that they've taken it all on board. I'm encouraged that they are engaging fans who were at the final. I'm encouraged that they've given a commitment to continue that engagement with fans. So all in all, I'd say it was a meeting that was worthwhile having. But you know, it kind of feels like it's 1-0 at half time now. So we just need to make sure that we don't take our foot off the gas in the second half and make sure that we deliver all of this now.
So what are the next steps as far as you guys are concerned? What are the next steps for UEFA, what they need to go away and do?
I think there's a couple of strands, really. I think the first one is that, as I say, we can't take the pressure off now. We need to make sure that we're still holding them to account for what happened in Paris, as indeed the French authorities. And I think that's why we've got a sort of two-pronged approach, really. One is the fans working with UEFA to make sure that they hold it up to what their promises are. But secondly as well, you know, we need the political support to make sure that we can fight the French authorities and also politically UEFA as well. You know, so that's why it's really important that Ian Byrne tabled his Westminster Hall debate on Tuesday, got government backing for making sure that fans will be supported through this process. So what we've got now is kind of, you know, with the support of yourselves in the media, with support of politicians and supporters groups as well, we think we've got now a really solid foundation on which to build to make sure that UEFA do deliver, and also the French authorities also take heed and take notice of what they did in leading up to Paris and also during and after.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about support there, and it is vital, isn't it, that the voice comes from a wider group as possible. So listen, Liverpool fans are quite happy to make a racket, and we'll come together and stand firm. But the wider we can cast that net, and the more people we can get involved, the better, really. And that might be, you know, within Liverpool, in terms of the football club and them, it's Liverpool politicians, but even outside of the city itself, because this is a fan issue. And I know you've been working a lot with the FSA and people like that to make it so this isn't just Liverpool supporters. It's not even really just English supporters, but that is the source of the starting point, you know, in a lot of ways, isn't it? Is the, you know, fundamentally the point we want to get to is that all football fans, wherever they're watching a game, are treated better, can be guaranteed safety and treated like people who are paying a lot of money to enjoy these fantastic experiences. And so the wider that support network comes, the better. And I know that's something that you've been passionate about and really working towards.
Yeah, it's spot on. I mean, I think that's it, isn't it? You know, more than anything else, we are acting on behalf of all football fans right across the UK and obviously Europe as well. You know, Liverpool fans, as we know, behaved impeccably in Paris last year, and that comes down obviously for a 34-year history of Hillsborough, but also many, many years of experience of European away trips and also European finals. So, you know, we know UEFA are crap at organising things, but at the same time, we know how to behave, how to work with that within. It's almost like a legacy and a generational issue. We just know how to handle these things. Two other groups of fans or another group of fans turned up to the final last year. You know, it could have, the consequences could have been far, far worse than what we had. And, you know, that's what Ian Byrne said in Parliament on Tuesday. You know, this could have been any group of football fans facing this, and it can't be allowed to happen. The FA have to take full responsibility to make sure that if English fans are travelling abroad, that they're treated with respect and dignity and supported, and they can do so safely. We want that as well. You know, we've got London is hosting the Champions League final next year. So whichever two teams, you know, get to the final, whether English or European, you want them to experience that it's great to go to the match. And that's all we want. Any of us want for any football fan to enjoy the game. And yeah, for the 90 minutes, we want our team to win. But the rest of it, we actually just want them to enjoy it in the same way that we've enjoyed football for forever.
The changes that need to be made, the changes that UEFA, thanks to people like yourself, have now sort of committed to, you know, how quickly can they be put in place, and how quickly are you expecting, you know, announcements on fundamental changes on the back of the report and the pressure that you guys have been putting on?
Well, clearly, you know, the inquiry said that they wanted to see a formal response from UEFA by the 8th of May, so we're going to hold until that. Importantly, can they make some changes before? I would hope so. I mean, organisations such as UEFA must recognise that within those reports there's some recommendations a little bit more complicated, but some are very easy to put in place. So I'm hopeful that what they'll do is pick on the low-hanging fruit, make those changes immediately, but also then give us a full commitment in terms of making the other changes. But we're not going to let them off with, oh, we make those changes by, you know, in 6 years' time or whenever. This has to be fundamental change, radical change, and it has to be within a time frame. That means that the next European final is actually safe for everyone to go to. So for me, it's unequivocal that all of this, not only do they have to meet the deadline for reporting it, they have to meet a deadline of within months to put these things in place.
Just finally, Joe, and a lot of people have struggled since Paris, it's, you know, been well documented that, you know, it was a traumatic experience. I know me personally, going back to football grounds a few times, I've been triggered at away grounds this season, going to Old Trafford, going to Goodison, and how you're policed in certain situations have affected me much more than they have done in previous years. And I know Paris is on the back of that. Stuff like this helps massively. Yeah, yeah. I know the UEFA report, albeit leaked in a bit of a messy way, was a huge moment for a lot of fans who were there. You know, the vindication, the exoneration that you sort of talked about. But there will be people still struggling. People get in touch with us saying that they've been, you know, not been back to games since and stuff like that. I know it's out there, but just to reiterate the support that is there for people who are still coming to terms with maybe what happened to them, you know, in Paris, you know, emotionally in other ways as well, you know, how can they sort of seek that support that is out there?
Yeah, clearly. I mean, you're right, John, and I think, you know, unfortunately, it is a trigger. I'm sure the report itself being released was a trigger. I'm sure that the next trigger will be when UEFA does its recommendations. When, you know, with that, we've got to be alive to that. There is support out there, and we have to make sure that people can be directed, signposted to that support. What we can't have is, you know, more survivors of Hillsborough taking their lives as a consequence of this. This is meant to be a positive, and we need to make sure that we manage the message effectively, so that people do feel comforted by that, but also, as you say, that people feel as though that they're able to go back into crowd situations, into the football matches, be supported. But part of that is about the UEFA changes. So, you know, we know, don't we, that when we tip up to our next European away game, most of the time you're just confronted by RoboCop police. And immediately you think, oh, my, there's something going on here. I'm not comfortable anymore. They have to change the whole approach to managing football matches. Has to be on the basis that this is a fan who's coming to watch a football match. And it's not a hooligan coming to watch and cause trouble in my city. So the sooner we get that narrative sorted, hopefully people will get a message that it's okay to go in the match again. But if you're still feeling unsure about it, that we have to have the networks in place and the signposting to ensure that people can feel safe to go and have a chat about it, get some support, and actually hopefully get some peace of mind about what football should be like.
Absolutely. Thanks again for your time, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Yeah, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Joined by Tim O'Tierney.
Yes.
To have a chat about, well, we'll get on to what we'll have a chat about, how things.
Brilliant. Life's good.
Life's good.
Feel young. Feels like I'm 41 in a month or something.
Ah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, time's flying by.
I'm 42.
Oh, I don't want to go
it's
age.
Fine. I'm quite enjoying it, to be honest. I'm not quite as quick as I used to be on the one hand. But on the other hand, experience makes up for a lot of, you know, a lot of foibles.
A lot of flaws.
Yeah, a lot of flaws.
I quite like walking through John Lewis now. Never used to. But now I like getting out the car and walking through John Lewis rug department. Don't ever look at anything to buy. Just walk through as if, like, yeah, I'm old enough.
I do. I like the lighting. Never bought a lamp. No. But I like to sort of look at lamps and think, well, that one's nice. But maybe when we're 44, 45, 46, we'll make the next move and maybe purchase something. But I'm a spectator of the light department, but yeah, I like it.
Definitely the rug zone. I'm a spectator. That rug zone ain't getting touched yet. I thought that's some like kind of pension of being paying into miraculously through my age comes in when I'm like 60 and I might be able to buy a rug.
Get some rugs.
A couple.
It's the rug money. It's the rug trust. That's it all worked out. How's the flory?
Excellent. Things are good at the moment. Very busy, as per usual, which is expected. Fridays and they're just mad. We have like the food, Union Food Bank open from 10 o'clock and you get in. It's just chock. We have a ukulele group as well on it, and we have the men's walk. So we had a couple of events in as well today, so it's been chocker from the get off, which is great.
It is great. Before we get on to what we're going to talk about in the short term, the other thing I wanted to mention was the event coming on the 1st of April with Michael Head at the Florrie and the Red Elastic Band in tribute to Love. It's going to be a big one. You must be excited.
Yeah, we've done loads of tickets. Still tickets available. It's a way of, you know, what we thought was, you know, there's a lot of places need support. You know, there's a lot of places in Liverpool where in the lockdown and in that kind of time, the people who were coming with donations and now the people coming who are asking for donations, there's been a big flip on its head. Everyone's kind of at a point struggling or struggled at some point, whether it be paying a bill or getting some food or, you know, whatever, getting to work to and from or being in work, I don't know. And this is happening around the city. We just thought, let's raise awareness for places all across this city, whether it be Kensington, Norris Green, you know, Croxteth, West Derby. So this food aid thing is an idea of supporting as many places as we possibly can, you know, because the Florrie has built up over the last few years of, you know, definitely leading the way in community organisations and things, you know, and putting gigs on and stuff. And that isn't the point of leading the way, oh, we're great. It's the point of leading the way of we are a massive building and we have to think of ways to keep the building open ourselves. You know, £66,000 or something, our utility bills are going to be over the next 12 months. How are we finding that? You know, so it's just that event should raise a lot of awareness and resources for a lot of people.
But we'll talk about what I've got you in to talk about, which is what's coming up next Tuesday, 7th of March. You wanted to get, how many guitarists did you want to get?
100, but I get 53 on the Tuesday now. So, you know, someone said to me the other day, why are you doing this? And I said, I don't know. I really don't know. But it came up on me. You get them memories on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram now, and something came up and it said, oh, I'd love to get 80 guitarists together in the Florian. And this was like 3 years ago. I've been at this for 7 years, this guitar group every Tuesday night. And I just thought, well, let's just have a little go. You see how many people would like to come and they can't get there every week. And week by week, I get people coming to classes who would think, I haven't saw you for weeks and you've just turned up and I haven't even thought about you. You know, because it must have well over 100 members who come different time, rotating and all the rest of it. So it's a bit of a nice little celebration. It's funny because I thought Liverpool play Real Madrid as well on the same night, but we don't. We play the week later.
Yeah.
So it's kind of all fell into place. And 100, you know, God knows if we get 100, I think we will.
So you're gathering 100 together to play in the Grand Hall.
Yeah.
It's going to help raise money for new musical equipment for the community stuff. It's Tuesday the 7th of March. Mm-hmm. It's 6 p.m. and all anyone needs to do is turn up with a guitar and a vague sense of Bebop Alula, Stand By Me, and Ticket to Ride.
No barcodes. Just dead simple. Come in. Because every week I shout the chords and my throat is killing me. Like, so I said, oh, I need one of them things. Like, I look like HR steps, not like a remote microphone. But PMT, which is a music shop in Liverpool, they've donated one. So, you know, raising money in the sense of like there's young people coming or people come in, and when they come in, they haven't got a guitar. I give them a guitar because we get loads of donations. And I think there's a massive thing if someone gives you something, you know, it's nice. And that's what the Florry is, you know, it's a nice place. So if you're out about and you can't play them a couple of chords, or if you can't play them chords, you want to come along and just get involved and sit there and mime, that's also fine.
Also fine, just for people to feel involved. And I think that this is a big thing that you're at the Florry as much as possible. Yeah. It's the idea of people spend the time, get involved, feel involved, and that's part of what you want for that whole community, mm-hmm. for the whole area, and everyone to feel as though they're very much part of it.
Inclusive, not exclusive, you know, and whether it be, you know, 12 years of age or 96, come along, you know, and this should be something like, which, you know, I think, I know that there's been, low. I'm not looking on breaking records here, I'm just looking on bringing people together. So that's all.
That's all. But it's a perfectly wonderful thing to do. Tim@theflorry.org for more information if you want to email them. Also, it's on the Florry's Twitter. It's on everything that they've got going on social media, and it's on Timo's as well. So it is the 7th. I'll do the chat in a minute. Tuesday the 7th of March, 6 p.m. Trying to get over 100 guitarists there. If you want to go, if you know of anyone who would want to go, do encourage them to bob along. They'll be made more than welcome by the wonderful people at the Florry. Anything happening with the band? That was a valid answer.
No.
No? You're 41, you've got to go to John Lewis, you've got to look at rugs.
Simple question, simple answer.
All right, but he can be with the Florry, Tuesday, 7th of March, 6 p.m. It was 1 second, it was 25:54, do check your golden goal, see how you got on. Andy says 25:55, we'll go with him on that one. Sorry to all of you who had 25:54 on the bingo card. You cannot collect the bottle of Lamborghini this week. You'll have to go with something else. It is very good of John to speak to Joe, and it was nice to see Timo as well. The Anfield Rap is live in the United States during the international break. We go to Toronto, we go to Detroit, we go to Boston, we go to New York, we go to Philadelphia, and we go to Washington. That was six, wasn't it? Did I say six? I said six.
Sounded like more than that.
They're on back-to-back nights, so it does sound like more than that. TheAnfieldRap.com/TAW live if you will be interested in any of them during the international break. Starts at Toronto, ends at Washington, but Washington is sold out, as is Detroit. Washington and Detroit are sold out. Tickets available still for everything else, but Boston is selling fast. I'd like the other places to sell fast as well, to be honest with you. So if you can sort that out, that'd be marvellous. Loads of fantastic stuff if you want to subscribe and support the Anfield Wrap coming up around Man United and around the Roberto Firmino news. Everything you need on that as well. You know how to do that by now, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe, or on your app, you can subscribe through that as well to everything that we do. Let's have a chat about the game coming up against Manchester United, Sean. They're the League Cup winners. They're the conquerors of Barcelona. They've got momentum. They feel good about things at the moment. all that sound. It is now a different affair than it might have been three, 4 games ago for them coming up against this Liverpool side. There's 5 games, a body of evidence of 5 games. I am including the Real Madrid game because in it, Liverpool power to an early 2-0 lead. That suggests that Liverpool are in slightly better nick, certainly, than they were a month ago. But United are also in very, very, very good shape. They're worthy of being respected. They're always worthy of being respected, but they're worthy of being respected. We're going to have to play well for 100 minutes, Sean.
Oh, all this chat is unbearable, isn't it? I heard someone talking about the quadruple for Man United the other day. I thought, wow, what is going on? I'm actually going to do what
we've all had a pint, Sean. We've all had a pint.
well, I'm going to do what Klopp did in the press conference and balk at the idea of it. But yeah, I was looking at the form table of Man United, and yes, they do feel like they're having their moment. But if you look at the form from the last 10 games, yeah, the top of the table. But if you're looking at the last 6, we're pretty much the same. We've both won 3, drew 2, lost 1. I guess the context around their losses is Arsenal. But in the form table, we're pretty much, I think it's like 4th and 5th. Yeah. And if you're looking at, so that tells me, you know, I guess form goes out the window with these games, as the cliche goes. But as Klopp said, you know, we've been in really good moments and they've came and frustrated us. And I'm kind of hoping we just go and frustrate them. I'm not looking for us to blow them out the water. I think we just need to hold our own, and 0-0. I'm absolutely happy with. You know, looking at our home games, yes, we do need to win them for the rest of the season to get top 4. But I think this is an exception. I want us to be sensible, frustrate them, don't gift them. And also, if you're looking at our top form against the top 6, we've done all right this season. Yeah. We've won 4, lost 2, beat Newcastle twice. We've beat Spurs away. We've beat City at home. We've only lost to Arsenal, which was a tight game. And Man United, yeah, you have to take that on the chin. We were pretty dreadful. But that was, what, the 3rd game in the season. So that's firmly swept under the carpet now. So I think you can turn that narrative on its head. I think we've got a good chance of getting something, but certainly a draw, and certainly not getting beat.
Sean's points, Sean, on the big game, Liverpool this season, is, for me, it's really interesting, really valid. I mean, they win 5 of the 6 Champions League group games as well. That obviously does not involve me classing Glasgow Rangers as a big team. But they get the job done there. They beat City at home, as said already. You know, that Spurs away is one of the better performances of the campaign. They cruise into a smart 2-0 lead against Newcastle. My point here is I think that United will actually turn up with that being the Liverpool they expect to face. I don't think United are going to turn up thinking the Liverpool are going to be soft. I think that the thing that it feels like Ten Hag's done really, really well this season is make Manchester United serious. They very rarely play well for a full 90, but they very rarely find themselves on the rack, genuinely on the rack, for extended periods of time. Leicester did really well against them recently until they went 1-0 United, and then United ran away with it. I think that the main problem that we're almost going to face is that this United team's not going to rope-a-dope itself in any way, shape or form, and I think that they'll almost possibly be happy enough with the idea of 0-0 on 70 as much as we might be.
I agree. There's still a risk that they get a bit giddy. I don't think it's a big risk. We saw this with I thought Newcastle might get a bit giddy when we went up there, and it might be a good time to play him. And similar to what Sean was saying, the way people are going on, you think this is like, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters, and it isn't. And I wouldn't be surprised if some, and it only takes a few of their players to be a bit giddy. I'm not talking about your Casemiros and everyone else here. From a Liverpool point of view, I think in the big games we've been a bit more focused, really, and the concentration levels and everything has been there. And I think the fact that some teams are more likely to have a bit of a go helps us as well in terms of actually being able to counter against some of these sides.
Just on that, Sean, I think what actually helps us is because I think some of the sides, for instance, who've got decent results against us have actually had a bit of a go. I think it's more, we're more tolerant almost of the idea of there's going to be...
We're expecting the suffering.
Exactly. And we suffer better because we're expecting the suffering. Yeah. And I think that's been the thing that's been different. Even in the Arsenal 3-2, you know, it's worth pointing out we come back in the Arsenal 3-2 twice. So, you know, I think we've been better in the context of when we've been coming up against these sides where we're able to say before, and listen, this isn't all going to go our way all the way through.
Totally. And look, it wouldn't be me if it wasn't a boxing analogy, but, you know, if you're coming up against someone who's number 5th contender and they land a blow on you, you're more tempted just to start throwing hooks and reacting in a poor way. Whereas when you're in a world title fight, you get one on the nose, you cover up, you jab, you're just more professional in the way you deal with it. And I think that goes almost across sport to a degree. And I think in this game, the negative is that there's two things United have got that are a bit of our kryptonite, really, in that they have a very intense mid-block that's difficult to play through, that can win the ball. And the other problem they've got is Marcus Rashford trying to spring in, you expect, down the sides of our centre-backs. And I know we've referenced this on other shows, but it is a concern for me. Michael Olise has more touches than Salah, and it's Crystal Palace. Sir Maximan in a 10-man Newcastle has far too many touches and far too much space. That shouldn't be happening. And Vinicius Junior has far too many touches. So the opposition's threat, they can have a good game against you, but they should be coming off the pitch saying, especially at Anfield, that's the worst game of my season. I'm black, I'm blue. That was a nightmare. I had no space. I had no time. There's too many players coming up against us who have got space. They're getting too much supply. And those are my concerns. Over that, I think Liverpool can get at this United team. And the key for me is Darwin Nunes against whoever they play at right back. And for that reason, and particularly what we saw against Wolves, Rob's dead right what he was referencing before about after the 15 minutes, but it was noticeable that Fabinho dropped in to how we build the play. And I've bored people, no one more than you probably, Neil, in wanting Liverpool to build the play with three at the back. And that can be Fabinho dropping in. We've seen it earlier in the campaign with Trent sitting in a little bit more to build that play. And you find that we build the play safer. The midfield don't have to come as deep either. The thing it'll set up for us on Sunday is a Trent diag to Nunes. And I want to see Liverpool, yes, okay, look to play out a bit safer, but I want to see Trent on the ball as much as you can. And it opens up that diag to Nunes as an out ball, if nothing else. And we've just got to get as much as we can to Nunes against whoever they play at right back. If you're a United fan, player, coach, whatever, I think that's your big worry first 20 is Darwin Nunes. And I don't think we should disappoint them. I think we've got to make sure we get as much in. And also, what Rob was saying, I think we've been too one-dimensional in the way we build out. And that's why teams have been able to capitalise on it, because they can prepare for it and then they know what they're getting. Hit 10 minutes of diags, the United lot are going to drop off. And of course, we'll be able to play out better because they're not as confident on what's going to flow from that point.
It's one where the first 20 against Madrid, I feel as though, is instructional. What then happens from there? You know, United are capable of to a degree, but they have not got the quality of footballers as Real Madrid. They're not that far off. It's worth pointing that out. You know, they've got one of the biggest budgets in Europe, for God's sake.
They're not Barcelona, actually, better than
they're just not
Madrid.
Barcelona. They were currently higher than Madrid in the league.
Yeah.
So it's worth bearing that in mind. So yeah. I think you know, across the board here, we are coming up against a very, very good side, Rob, and a side that will have their own plan, their own way to sort of execute against us. For me, what's important is being ruthless when the opportunities come, being clinical when the opportunities come, knowing that the opportunities will come, and that's something that we did very well against Madrid. We knew the opportunities would come, and then we did it terribly. I think staying emotionally calm in those moments, the moments of sheer success, as much as anything else, are what's going to matter for this side.
Yeah, I'm not sure this is a very good United team. I think it's a very confident, on the basis of results, and very calm United team. Ten Hag's done a job on them. It's difficult to know where the balance lies. I saw something, a headline this week, which said United have caught up in 6 months, 6 years on Liverpool, apparently. I mean, they finished ahead of us in the pandemic season, and we're nowhere in last season. So there's a lot of premature analysis and conclusions being drawn here. I'd like to see what they look like when they've been through a rocky patch before we can judge them, and whether the players stay with Ten Hag in that situation. But look, notwithstanding just that scepticism, they will be a threat. They will be a challenge. I don't think we can compare them to Real Madrid, really. And also, I don't think that game's hard to compare with any game, because too many fluky, weird things happened in that game. Okay, the Vinicius goal is a work of genius. I don't think it happens for him every single game that way. I don't know if his goal scored record is that good that every time he touches the ball, looks inside, it's in the net. I don't think it is. their second goal is a total fluke, and the fourth goal is a fluke, and the third goal is Liverpool switching off and being in a bad place mentally. If Liverpool don't shoot themselves in the foot, and they did throughout that Madrid game, and bring their best game, I don't care what United bring. I think Liverpool will beat them, notwithstanding that these are things of fine margins and you need not to have ridiculous errors and self-defeating moments. Can't say, am I confident? I wasn't confident we'd beat Wolves, but we did. I would say, though, that I do wonder how Liverpool set about this, because I think winning would be sensationally brilliant and so important for the season, but defeat could be a little bit on the edge of catastrophic for us at this stage.
I think that's part of the manager ends up thinking about the Palace game, Rob, and that's why for me, you know, I'm not quite in the would take a 0-0 boat, but I'm not that far away. I'm looking at the will take a 0-0 boat. It's moored there. It's on the jetty. I'm staring at it. I might be prepared to get on that boat because I agree, and I also think that the move of the Fulham fixture, for me, it sets up this idea that Liverpool's season is April and May, and it's a massive sprint to the line. That's the Liverpool season, and that's going to come, and that's going to be a challenge. The only thing that, again, sort of knocks that off skew for me is that the first week of April is City away, Chelsea away, Arsenal at home, and that's quite the week to sort, you know, so it would be lovely to get the 3 points in the bank on this one, and then I'll talk about taking some draws first week of April, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that all makes sense. You could look at this basket of games without the Fulham respite in between them and say, you know what, we could face a situation where we maybe only win one in four, and that would feel like the end of the quest for the Champions League. So you might be right there. Winning is important for those reasons. Winning is important also to have a fighting chance of actually overhauling United, because I think Liverpool have to focus on the still two positions up for grabs, albeit that United seem to be out the way and over the hill at the moment. But if Liverpool could defeat them, it would draw them in significantly, as well as denting their confidence. So a win would be very, very important. I think what we're all saying is love to win, don't lose. Also, don't be morose about the fact that if we get a draw.
Sean, Liverpool team then approach. I feel like Jota Gakpo is a question, one you've already answered. I feel as though there may be a question around the midfield. There may not be. And I presume you think that the back four will be that of Trent Alexander-Arnold, Konate, Van Dijk and Andy Robertson.
Yeah, front three stays the same for me. I think the only question for me in midfield is Elliot. I think Fabinho stays, you know, he's looking back to his best. There was a moment in the Wolves game where he like absolutely ploughs through one of their defenders in their box to win the ball back and nearly creates a chance. And I loved it because he's been such a soft touch the whole season. That was a moment where I was like, that's like the magic we've been missing. So I think he keeps his place, Bacicic, without a question. And I actually think Henderson will come back into this just for the context around the game and it being a big game and I'm trusting the senior players. But I think it'll be really harsh on Elliot because he had like a hat-trick of chances against Wolves. At least one of them should have been a goal. I wish he started against Palace. And I thought when he did come on, he was one of very few positives that we could take away from it. But yeah, I see it being Henderson purely for experience. And then again, probably harsh on Tsimikas to get dropped, but it's Andy Robertson. I think him and Alisson have been playing out their skin this season. And Robertson loves derbies. You know, going back to the Everton game, he lives for this. So, yeah, can't not have Andy Robbo.
Sean, are you going with Gakpo? Are you going with Jota? What are you doing?
I think what Klopp's doing isn't debatable, really. He's picked his team before the Wolves game, and I suspect he's already had them conversations. So Robertson comes in for Tsimikas. Gakpo comes in for Jota. He'd already said after the Palace game that Jota was really tight and sore after the running against Palace. So I thought that was a bit touch and go. He likes putting people in against the former clubs as a bit of a, well, you get that game because you're not getting United. And I think Henderson comes in for Elliot, and then that gives him the attacking change and the fresh legs if he needs it by having Elliot on the bench. Especially with no Diaz, it's helpful to have that option there. United have got a few more selection headaches for me. When they went away to Barcelona, they put Rashford in the nine and played like Horst in midfield. And I think they got away with that a little bit. They played Fernandez as a sort of floating right midfield type role, Ray Houghton-esque one for the kids, and Sancho on the left. Whether he puts Rashford on the left or central, what he does there. And then his big decisions at right back. And that could be game defining. Liverpool's way home is Darwin Núñez in this, certainly first 20 minutes. And we have to be all over there right back. And Andy Robertson helps in that regard. And Bacic will help. You know, they've got to pick up the bits and support Darwin Núñez. And we can get at them, like, we can really get at them in that area. I don't want to see us overplaying at the back when there are opportunities to trigger a set to really try and hit United in that area.
What do you think he goes with Gakpo? Sean shout there, as he's already picked it. He knows he's Gakpo. What do you think?
I think Sean's logic is correct in second guessing Klopp. I think Klopp made how many changes from Palace to Wolves? I think it was three, something like that. He dropped out Robertson. He made a change in midfield. And he made a change up front. So the opportunity is to do that again. I think he'll like that for fresh legs' sake. So I think he'd like to have picked Jota, quite frankly. I think he thinks Jota's better than Gakpo, because at the moment he is. But I do agree that Gakpo probably does come back in. I think it's very, again, as Sean said on Elliot, it feels a bit harsh, but again, I think he'll want the rotation. I think he'll want to allow Fabinho to continue his form. Bacic dropped out against Palace, was fantastic, I thought, against Wolves, will stay in. So Henderson probably does come in for Elliot. He edges it just because of the fresh legs factor rather than because it's Man U. And Robbo for Shimikas is a shoo-in. I mean, I'm interested that we could swamp that midfield of theirs, the central two, get around them. They are playing a 4-2-4, really, any way you riddle it. Those are four attacking players who are not defensive. So if they come at us that way, we could have them off. Let's see if we bring out best game. Just my final comment on Darwin Núñez. I'm enjoying watching him every time, but there are periods in every game where I think, why the hell is he in the centre and somebody else fanning around on the left, be it Jota or Gakpo? Play Darwin Núñez the way you played Sadio Mane. Play Darwin Núñez the way Arsenal used to play Thierry Henry. He's a forward who attacks from left-sided positions. And number nine is always a number 10, be it, or a 9.5. Let that player vacate the space for Darwin to get into and score. But I'm sick of seeing the ball being pinged out to fullback and Darwin being 20 yards infield at times. It seems to take us 25, 30 minutes every game to work this one out and for Darwin to start getting seriously wide. And when we did it against Wolves, he created that chance for Harvey Elliott when Jota slightly overplayed the ball and Darwin used that ridiculous pace of his to get the ball across. So play Darwin left. That's the most important thing for me, is I'd like to see him playing properly left.
You want to see him? Do you want to see him outside as fullback? Starting outside the fullback.
I don't mind that.
Not starting outside the opposition fullback.
Outside Robertson.
No, outside Wan-Bissaka or Dalot. Outside the come attacking from outside. Don't mind that. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't mind that. Yeah.
Okay. You looking forward to it?
Yeah. Do you know what I am? And I am confident.
Sean, you looking forward to it?
Always.
Sean, you looking forward to it?
I'm gonna risk tempting fate. My son has been going for 6 years and never seen Liverpool get beat.
What?
So that run.
Ian Rush.
He is Ian Rush.
He basically, yeah. So that run will not end, because I mean, Josh is with me. So end the story. It's a draw or a win, and I think we will. I think it depends. If we are 0-0 on 20 minutes, I think we win the game. My biggest nervousness is the first 20 minutes and the way teams have been pinching it off us and releasing players in that kind of an area. The first 20 minutes is key.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed. We all survived the Sean Sean nonsense brilliantly. Well played to the two of you. I thought you were excellent throughout.
Baby names, Neil. If baby. It's a girl, you go Sean. If it's a boy, you go Sean. There
exactly.
You go.
That's the way in which it works, the way in which it's decided. Thank you very much to Mr. Rob Gutman. Never thinking about the past, always thinking about the future, with the possible exception of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Thank you very much to Andy Heaton for producing, for Joe Blott, John Gibbons, and Tim O'Tierney. It's been Tour Live. Before Liverpool play Manchester United, subscribe to everything. Enjoy it all. Enjoy Sunday. It'll be a big Sunday night, I think. Sports Social Podcast Network.